Good morning. I call the meeting of the Education Policy Conference Committee on Bill 3567 to order. Welcome back, committee members and other participants around the table and around the room. We will move on to agenda, which is to start looking at and adopting provisions. Everyone should have a document before them labeled Education Policy with the file number dated with yesterday's date on the top left corner. And mine looks like this. It's one of these. And this will be the good summary sheet of the provisions that we'll be talking about. We'll make sure everybody's got that before we start. Okay, if we're... Okay, so what we'll do, our process will be is we'll have our excellent nonpartisan staff walk through the provisions for us. We'll have time for discussion, and then we'll see how we move forward in terms of being able to vote on adopting this morning. Okay. All right, so I will turn it over to our nonpartisan staff, Ms. Pera.
Madam Chair and members, so I'll be walking through the Article 1 proposed provisions. So in Article 1, the proposal is to adopt Article 1, Section 3 of the House language, which was the school cell phone policy provision. To adopt from the Senate language in Article 1, Sections 1, 2, and 3, Section 1, is the PSEO notification provision requiring a post-secondary institution to notify the school if the pupil withdraws or is not receiving instruction. Section 2 is the digital instruction provision that adds a reference to federal law. And Section 3 is the supplemental online courses provision allowing a student to enroll in additional courses with an online provider under a separate agreement. Continuing, the House proposal is to adopt House Article 1, Section 6, which is the four-day week language, which allows requires the commissioner to establish criteria for evaluating an application to adopt a four-day week. Apply that and follow that procedure, and then once a district is approved, that would last 6 years. And then the last provisions that the House proposes to approve are the Senate language in House Article in that I mean Senate Article 1, Section 4, which is the lease purchase language, and Senate Section 5, which is a reviser instruction.
So we're looking at Article 1, and I do want to highlight that there are some provisions that were in the House bill that were not in the Senate bill, and I think this is a good time to have some discussion of what those provisions are and actually any questions, make sure that we're answering them today. So Representative Hill, the cell phone policy.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. And members, I just wanted to kind of highlight exactly what we're talking about when it comes to the cell phone policy. What this does is it allows for some of our experts on the topic, members of our principal groups, to get together and to come up with a model policy to share with districts, to equip districts to take on this challenge. Cell phone use in schools is everywhere. And, you know, from the variety of roles that I've fulfilled, whether it's instructional, administrative, otherwise, they impact our students a great deal. And they impact our students' ability to focus, their learning, their mental health. Most of the origins of the significant issues that I've seen with students seem to stem from their cell phones, whether it's social media, et cetera, communications that are unsupervised, et cetera. So this allows our principals to put together a model policy. It equips our districts to address this issue. Typically, this is an issue that nobody wants to address head on. Nobody wants to be the phone police, so to speak. And so I'm glad that we're going to put our arms around this and put some plans out there that districts can utilize and use where they see fit for their own local needs. So thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to comment that the original authors of this bill was members from both party. It was Representative Feist in the House and also Representative Robbins. Representative Robbins, one of her schools that she represents in the Maple Grove area, had put into place a cell phone policy that was very clear and very effective, and they showed dramatic results from being able to address this head on. And I also want to give our thanks to the different school principal organizations that came forward and said, you know, we can do this. We can put together these ideas for best practices, and then the local schools then would get these ideas for best practices and can adopt their own policies based on what these best practices are recommended to be. So we feel that this is a soft touch, but it does say that this is a priority and that we know this is a priority. I mean, so much data being introduced right now about the importance of addressing cell phone use in schools, and this is the big change. Since some people were teachers, some people had kids in the schools, but teachers today, this is what we're hearing about, and that it just needs to be a comprehensive approach, and we think that at the state level, that's the place to initiate this idea of a comprehensive approach. So we appreciate the Senate looking at this provision. Any questions? Senator Abler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You talk about things changing. When I was a kid, we had two cups and a string to communicate with each other. I don't mind this, but I'm just curious how many districts have just found themselves incapable of doing some of this stuff, and more thematically, just on the idea of, sometimes they're pretty resilient. They can figure things out, and there's stuff that we think they should be doing, not this thing necessarily, but just on the whole topic of what we're so smart about here and how they just can't possibly know anything out there. How many districts are struggling with this? And I think, thank goodness now we have to have a policy. Are there some districts that have just been unable to to address it at all? Do you know, Representative Hill, if you worked on this, do you know? I'm just curious about that. And I'll just finish my thoughts on the topic. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the trouble with last year's bill was like half of it was tied up in slices of stuff that people had to do with this or that bit of money and caused quite a stir. My district's cutting $29 million, including reading specialists, in the face of bad reading stuff. That's called administration, I'm told. Like, holy crap. I think we just need to be just generally careful about that, and I think we weren't. And this is not going to change the world to be horrible, but just on to that question, now they'll have to do it, and so they can blame the state of the ones that wanted to. But how many districts do you think have done nothing to address cell phones? Do you know, Representative?
Representative Hill.
Well, thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you, Senator, for the question. I don't have specifics. Yeah. What I do know is that every educational setting I've been in is struggling with this question. And what the language does here is it provides them with a model policy. It's not a mandate. It's an opportunity to utilize what our colleagues that serve as principals come up with, and they're the experts. Trust me, the work that they do oftentimes goes back to the nexus of figuring out who said what, where were they when they said it, what did it mean, what did it lead to, in all those behaviors to untangle. Yeah. And so, again, not a mandate, but an opportunity for them to put some best practices out there that districts can readily grab and use as they see fit for their local needs.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Abel.
So I agree it's a problem, and, you know, I'm not going to vote against this motion, but just on the whole, if you hear any comments from me going along, it's like, really, they wouldn't have thought of that all by themselves. That's what my district is a leader. They're the largest. They're responsible. And sometimes our wisdom doesn't help them get better. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just make a few comments, and I guess I echo some of the conversations that Senator Abler just brought up. Last year we had, 65 new mandates on districts. And every time you say must, it is a mandate, and there are musts in here. It's a softer mandate because all we're telling districts is you must have a cell phone policy. I really do believe districts are fully capable of this on their own without us telling them they have to, because I would bet if we surveyed districts, they all have some kind of cell phone policy. I do like the idea of the principals associations getting together, collaborating, and coming up with model policy. I think that's great. But to tell districts you must have that is another thing they have to put their eyes on, to keep their eye off the ball of really the things we want them to concentrate on right now, things like literacy, mathematics, and all those things. It's just one more thing. It's like juggling with all these balls, and how do you keep your eye on the important ones? So I agree this is an important issue. I think the cell phone issue, and we know screen time. Thank goodness my first graders didn't have cell phones. They probably do now. But and yes, districts should have a policy, and they're very capable of that. I just don't think as a state we need to start mandating this. Because pretty soon it's not just going to be this, it's going to be we're going to mandate a certain type of policy. That just seems to be how it always happens. And I would rather allow them to focus on those core academics, all those mandates we put upon them last year, and have those principals associations develop model policy, because it will get itself into those districts in a way that works for them. So just some comments. I know it's an important area, but I just don't think we need another must for our schools.
Senator DeNayquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the Conference Committee's patience with a hard toddler morning. But I was able to tune in on the way in, so I've been following along. And I you know, there was a paper that was released just yesterday from Norway. They banned smartphones in schools, and it significantly decreased doctors' visits for psychological symptoms and diseases among girls. It reduced bullying among both genders. It improved GPAs and attendance rates, and the largest effect sizes were among the kids with the lowest incomes. And so I think when we're talking about wanting kids to be able to have those basics, the literacy chief author sitting in front of you right here, we all know that kids can't learn if they're having all of these things that are happening in their lives and being distracted. And we know mental health continues to be an issue. We know attendance continues to be an issue. And I think one of the things that I'm mindful of is the third largest school district, representing the third largest school district in the state, is that sometimes there are things available to districts like mine that aren't available to districts that are smaller. And so while districts might have cell phone policies and are perfectly capable of adopting them, it's more than just having a policy. It's having a good policy that's effective, that feels fair, that is enforceable, that is consistent, that educators feel they can enforce, that students feel like it's fair, and that parents feel comfortable with too. And so I think it's more than just having a policy. It's having a good one. And we've outlined here the minimizing the impact on student behavior, mental health, and academic attainment. That's more than just writing something down. It takes a little bit of digging and insight and looking to see what works. So I appreciate the thoughtfulness that went into this piece coming over from the House, and I think it's going to be good. And it's, you know, less strict than some of the things I've heard, which is we should ban cell phones in school. So I think this is probably a better tactic for now. Thank you.
Chair Swiezinski.
Thank you. every time I hear the word model policy, my head pictures, are we modeling appropriate behavior for our children and our own addictions to these devices? And so maybe that might be another thing. We just I want to plant that seed in the adults' heads in the room that maybe we should be modeling what we think is proper behavior for the children. But nonetheless, with that said, the states have often been called the laboratories of democracy, and I've always thought of school districts as like lab stations. And I love this proposal that came from the House in that we're telling the school districts, figure this out on your own. And some district out there is going to come up with this amazing idea that's going to result in all the wonderful things that Senator McQuaid just alluded to. And we're all going to go, wow, that's the right approach, and let's all adopt that because it really did all those things that Senator McQuaid referenced, and we can help kids and become the wonderful citizens that they're capable of. So thank you, Senator Chair Pryor.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. I'd just close with this thought. I did ride in with a family friend today who's an educational expert. He's a junior at Stillwater Area High School. Today is Career Pathways Day, and he wanted to come and see the show. When we were talking about this matter on the way in, Mr. McGlynn, who's over my left shoulder, said to me, you know, I wouldn't mind at all if the cell phones went away at school. And, you know, I think there's this idea out there that our students are going to rebel against this or rage against this. I think there's an appetite, and I think that, you know, the matters that Senator McQuaid brings up are definitely they're relevant, and that's what's happening in real time in our schools. So I think this is a good policy, and I think that it actually frees our districts up a great deal to utilize what that best practice is that our experts bring forth.
Thank you, members. I'd next like to turn to a second provision that was in the House that was not in the Senate that I think could also definitely needs a little bit of discussion in this setting too, and that is the flexibility for school districts to apply to the Department of Education to initiate 4-day school week. And if Representative Bennett, if you could bring us all up to date about what the thinking is and our experience, what we heard in the House on this issue.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. This provision was brought forward to us by Representative Dave Baker, who has a school district. I should back up here. We heard from a number of districts who perhaps desire to start exploring this factor, but they're finding it's really difficult to navigate with the Department of Education and would like to just have more clarity and even openness to be able to pursue. Our districts find in some cases that when they have these long bus rides and distances that they're able to actually get more instruction time for their kids and students, less time on the buses. Their staff like it, but in this situation, the districts work with staff, they work with the Department of Education, with parents, with community. And if they come up with a plan that works for them, we are just asking the Department of Education to make the process a little more clear and so those districts can pursue this if that works best for them, if that's a general thought on it.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. And I can say when Representative Baker kept asking me about this bill and if I would give it a hearing, and it started last year, I was thinking, oh, I don't know. It just, as a parent, I can't imagine it. We did get into the details of it. We know that there are 6 school districts in Minnesota that currently use the 4-day school week, and some of them have been using it long enough that there is a students that started in kindergarten and have only had 4-day school weeks. And so we have data from these school districts to show that that the students are continuing to thrive with this different system. So 4 days a week but longer days. And the school districts have found that there's a certain flexibility that allows, and as Representative Bennett just mentioned too, you know, what's the alternative? Is that they're spending less time on buses. And that's a big thing that I see as being a gain. Of course, Minnesota's not the only not the only state that has allowed this, and there's actually national data. One thing that's pretty clear is that this is something that's to an advantage to certain school districts, and that they tend to be rural school districts. They are rural school districts. I'm just going to put it out there. And when we are talking about travel time as being the big variable that a metro school district doesn't have to deal with. And you see in Minnesota, as well as other states in around the country, school districts in those states, it's the rural ones that are choosing this options, and it's the rural ones that show results that says, yes, this is not a detriment to student education, which is where we start. You know, we won't do this. We won't sacrifice education for the students, even if there's other benefits that accrue from having a system like this. I mean, if there's any specific information about how this process has worked, I know that the department would be willing to come up. And I can also put it in the context that there was school districts a while back started making this choice, started it, then there was a moratorium when they could not apply. And now the Department of Education has changed that and opened up applications again for going to this. And Representative McQuaid, it looks like you have a question or comment.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. I would love to have the department come up. I'm not immediately opposed to this. I think one thing that was clear to me, after last session coming into this session is just getting, you know, a little mini hearing to just understand a little bit more so that I feel we feel comfortable making decisions. And I particularly like the idea of flexible all-year plans. I have been an enjoyer of all year-round school myself. So I would love to hear from the department about this. That'd be great.
Okay.
What the criteria is specifically, what we're seeing in those school districts, how educators are responding, how students are responding, how parents are responding. I'm particularly thinking about work weeks and how that goes there, too. So,
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And I think Chair Pryor laid out what the history has been over kind of the past 10 years and then up into this spring where we reopened the process for 4-day week. Flexible learning year covers multiple models around looking at alternate schedules for the school year, 45 days on, 15 days off, pre-Labor Day start. There's multiple ways to qualify for that, and 4-day school week. For our flexible learning year programs, we have an application process to the department. It's kind of a rigorous application process. As the chair mentioned, we had a moratorium, I think starting in 2018 or 17. It was an open program until about 2015 when some legislation created some guardrails around the program where those that had the program approved already were allowed to continue on if they were able to continue to meet the world's best workforce goals every 3 years or 3 or 4 years. So I believe we had an approval process that looked at their their performance on those standards over 3 or 4 years. The commissioner and other leadership staff have been hearing from districts over the course of the last year or two around the need for that and how it'll work for their communities, and really looked at what we have been thinking around why there was a pause and where this could help school districts out, had some deep conversations about how that would, I think where your questions are going, is how that would impact the community, and looking at it from multiple angles, not just one angle around, are there cost efficiencies? One angle around, does this work for the community schedule? But what are the impacts for our students receiving special education services? What are impacts for students who may not have a whole lot of food security over the course of the 7 days of the week? Not just the 4 to 5 days that they're in school. What is the impact on maybe hourly school workers? What is the impact, and those would be our nutrition workers, our bus drivers, our paraprofessionals. And also, what is the impact on school-age care for those families that may struggle in that fifth day? So all of those items are questions and assurances in our application process where we need to see that the community engaged in those conversations with the affected community members and affected school members there. So those are considerations in statute and in rule. They do mention a range of reasons why a flexible year, learning year could be pursued and approved. And so there have to be facts presented to the Department of Education demonstrating that those thresholds have been met. But we do look for evidence of conversations as well as analysis of the impact that would have for those range of items that I discussed.
Senator Makeway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's really, really helpful background. Can you just talk about, with that criteria, with the statute, with the rules, with the applications, can you just talk a little bit about the impacts in districts that have done this and positive, negative, neutral?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Senator Makeway, that's actually a very timely question. The University of Minnesota did conduct a study, I think, in the last 2 years, and I think there's been some national studies. I'm not as familiar with the national studies around this. But, pardon me. The University of Minnesota study did look at the impact of four-day school week around academic achievement. I don't have the data to go into the granular level, but at a higher level, they saw that that it had, over the whole basket of districts they looked at, it had a neutral impact. In certain areas like in greater Minnesota, it had neutral to slightly, like in certain circumstances, not as a trend, slightly positive impact on academic achievement. In metro-based schools, and this is from national studies, in metro-based schools, they found that it had neutral to slightly negative impacts. And so they kind of determined that the four-day school week had around neutral impact on academic achievement. Now, that I'm not familiar with any results that spoke to of those studies that spoke to the impacts for some of the other areas that we discussed around what are the impacts for families around finding school-age care, what are the impacts around finding alternatives for nutrition, finding alternatives for special education services. But I will mention that in our testimony in the House when we discussed this, one of the areas or several of the areas that the department raised of concerns, the original proposal was allow school boards to choose this. And one of the great, you know, concerns that we brought up is how do we make certain that there's a consistent statewide expectation around doing the analysis around the needs for special education services being met and the need for nutrition services being met, as well as school-age care. And then are you having those conversations with your local units around the impacts for all workers?
Senator Abler.
Well, thanks. I think it's a great idea to give flexibility. We started the charter school back in 94. We were number 9 in the state. And we did a four-day week, excess hours, equivalent days. So we had longer days. And then the families loved the Friday off and worked out all the child care, whatever they had to do and everything. But they really enjoyed the chance to have the flexibility to go in deeper in their studies or whatever. But I think giving the school boards, giving the districts flexibility, and frankly, I don't, just with all respect to the department, school boards don't sit around thinking of cavalier ways to ruin people's lives and harm their areas. They think about it very hard. And if they're going to go to a four-day week, they've done their own internal review of child care, nutrition, and all that stuff, and maybe they can make options available if some families rely on the Monday to Friday meal plans and so on. But in a time when our students aren't doing well, I think we want to give districts flexibility to find their own way to help their own students succeed based upon the needs of their area. So, you know, this is not a blank check, but at least it opens up the options. And so if people are concerned about that, they're just going to run into it. There's plenty of guardrails that Mr. Uni talked about that they're going to scrutinize. But I think we should absolutely move forward with this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, members.
Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And great discussions. Thank you, Mr. Uni. I just love that, you know, I'm hoping we're able to give districts this local control to make choices that fit their students, their faculty, their parents and families and communities. I do remember some other testimony now on just having those Fridays freed up for appointments for both students and staff to be able to, you know, go to a doctor appointment, dentist appointment, whatever, teacher training, just less disruption during that instructional time. And then anytime we have students who are on a bus for an hour to an hour and a half in the morning and another hour to hour and a half in the coming home from school, I think we really need to look at giving districts this local flexibility and appreciate the Department of Education helping educate districts on, well, look at this, you know, child care, nutrition. But in the end, our schools and our school boards really need this local control. So appreciate the consideration here.
Thank you.
So now we'll turn to any other questions and discussions on the rest of Article 1. And that we have Article 1 was the, we otherwise was very much the same other than the two that we've highlighted. I think that was it. And the rest of the provisions were the same. Any other discussion, comments? All right. Then we will, I'll move Article 1 provisions as noted by staff for adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. The proposals, House and Senate provisions are adopted. Thank you. All right. Well, that was Article 1. We're done. let's do a time check. So it's about 9:15 right now. We can continue on and discuss the provisions in Article 2, and that we do have a number of same provisions. We had to make some adjustments for dates, and then we might have a section that we want to have some further look at that we'll hold back on. But I think at this point I'll have our nonpartisan walk through the provisions for Article 2.
Madam Chair and members, in Article 2, the House proposal is to adopt sections. The House and Senate have the same language for three sections, except for the different effective dates. In the Senate language, there's sections 1, 2, and 6. In the House language, you'll see those opposite on the side-by-side. Two of those were originally from House Article 1. So the first one is the directory information provision, and that was the same except for the effective date. The second was absences from school for religious and cultural observances. And the third is graduation requirements, the number of credits required for graduation. The next three sections, the House proposes to adopt the Senate language, and the next four sections. And these were the same in both bodies. The first section was Senate Section 12 and House Section 8 relating to assessments. Then test administration, that's Senate Section 13 and House Section 9. And then retaliation prohibited related to the assessments. That's Senate Section 14, House Section 10, and student performance data on the assessments. That's Senate Section 17, House Section 13, and that would be adopting the Senate language. The next section is Senate Section 18 and House Section 14. The proposal is to adopt the House language as amended by the A37, which should be in your packets. And that relates to when the department reports student performance data on the statewide assessments. The next section is Section 727 on the Senate side and 25 on the House side, and the House proposes to adopt the Senate language. That's the general requirements for programs provision. And the final provision is a repealer that is the same in both bodies, and the House proposes to adopt the Senate language.
And I can just highlight again what we're talking about here are the provisions in Article 2 that were the same between the two bills. But I want to make note, Ms. Pera did, on Senate Section 18, House Section 14, we are proposing that to change that language, and that the amendment, Senator Swiecinski will, Chair Swiecinski will introduce the amendment. We'll hold off on adapting, voting on that provision. But I will ask the committee after discussion to adopt the rest of the same provisions. But first of all, we'll discuss that amendment and then further consideration on if that's workable language and acceptable to all. All right, Senator Swiecinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A37 amendment I'd like to introduce.
Please proceed. Ms. Pera.
Madam Chair, members, the A37. So this amends the House language. That's on page R19. This is in Article 2. And the effects, well, let me start off. So the current language delays the deadline for the department to post on the website the school performance reports. So currently there's a September 1 deadline, except that in some years that is delayed to October 1st when the reports reflect new performance standards. The amendment would maintain that September 1st deadline, except for when the reports reflect new performance standards, and that would still be on October 1. But there is a kind of a third deadline that is added, which is November 1st, which would apply in years when new performance standards for academic standards-based assessments – oh, sorry, pardon me. Yes, in November 1 for years when there are new performance standards for English language proficiency assessments. Those are the access tests that students with limited English proficiency take. And so in those years, the reporting would be delayed.
And I think at this point it would be useful if Mr. Uni would come up again and walk us through the thinking behind this particular language and what we're hoping to achieve at this point. Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, Adosh Uni, Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And I think it would just maybe benefit the committee to just do a brief like overview of the original intent of the original proposal and then how we got to this this current proposal in partnership, I think, with advocates that had reached out with some concerns as well as reasoning for why the current timeline really provides benefit for a range of reasons, but also provide kind of where we came from with the original proposal. So the original proposal, which is language in both bills, which came from the governor's policy bill, was to adjust our accountability reporting dates, so which I think the public is used to seeing as the Minnesota report card, where we get to see aggregated data for student achievement and growth based on the outcomes of student assessments, mostly our MCAs in reading and math, but as well as our English language proficiency exam, which we get from a multi-state consortium called WIDA, which is run out of Wisconsin, which provides our access test. The accountability dates in statute currently are September 1st for normal years, I put that in quotes, and then in October 1st for years in which exams that are used for accountability purposes are adjusted to reflect reviewed and revised academic standards. So when our English language arts standards and our mathematics standards are updated, requiring an adjustment to our MCA tests, or when the WIDA-driven access test is adjusted due to new standards coming out in that space, then those standards are adjusted. We need extra time for validation purposes to make sure that the data is accurate. And since it's a new test, that has some impact on what the comparisons are to prior years because we don't have growth, right? Because if it's a new test It is not apples to apples anymore like it is in normal years. It is apples to oranges, so it's a new test. And so then we just needed a little bit of extra time there. Our proposal was to delay the reporting date to December 1st. We've been facing some challenges with every 10-year cycle when we have assessments updated in terms of staff capacity to be able to get the information out on time, final validation by October 1st, as well as some challenges compared to 10 years ago as it pertains to the access test. 10 years ago, when we had our new revised tests from the access tests that were done by WIDA. We, again, since it's done by a multi-state consortia, we don't have as much control or any control over the timeline in which they do the revisions to their assessments and allow us to do our final validation, whereas we do have control over that when it pertains to the MCA test. 10 years ago was before the new reauthorization of the federal ESEA, which is now Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA. ESSA, then, when that went into place, was reauthorized and went into place with the new accountability factors. We were required to include English language proficiency in that reporting. So now we are faced with a new situation where not only are we reporting out state-based test accountability results, but also English language proficiency results. So that's a little bit different from 10 years ago. So that's kind of the reasoning for the staff pressure as well as the new responsibilities to look at December 1st as our reporting date for accountability. And that's up to December 1st. It wouldn't necessarily be December 1st, but it would give us adequate time. We heard concerns here at the legislature, as well as from advocates around the needed use for accountability results coming out a little bit earlier in the school year. We went back to the team. We took a look really hard at what we were capable of and came back with some ideas around where we could make some tweaks and adjustments that are a little bit more of a scalpel approach. And so the proposal, as you see in front of you, is to keep September 1st in normal years, October 1st when there's adjustments to the state-based tests, and then November 1st when there's an adjustment to the WIDA access test. I've heard back from staff. As you know, our state-based standards are adjusted every 10 years. And the state-based tests that impact our accountability results are our reading or English language arts standards, as well as our math standards. Those are included in accountability results. I've heard back from staff that the WIDA access test is also adjusted around every 10 years or so. The last time it was adjusted was in 2016 that had the impact on or 2016 had an impact on when we were reporting out those results. And these, I've heard from the schedule that while we have an adjustment to the alternate access, which is alternate tests, that is coming up in 2025. In 2026 is the year when we're going to have the access test impacted by WIDA adjusting their standards, and that would impact our reporting out. So that would be the next time that this November 1st date would come into play.
Thank you. Discussion. Senator Abler.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the engagement of the department on the concerns of a whole bunch of people. Just a question, and I support the amendment, basically. I have a question about it first, though. So the years that you're changing, the November 1st, you know, that language deal, are the rest of the results, could they be released, you know, timely, or is there, do they all have to be delayed until that date? It seems like you could get done what you can, and then the one that has to wait could wait.
Mr. Uni.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Abel, that's a good question, one that I asked myself and to the team. And I'll give an example. So when the science test is adjusted, since the science results are not part of our federal accountability results, we can release all of when the science exam is adjusted, we can release all of our accountability results by the September 1st deadline that's currently in statute. But then by October 1st, we would do an update to the Minnesota report card to provide the updated science exam results. However, since the accountability results are required by federal ESSA for our English language proficiency in those years, in terms of logistics and how we would be able to package everything for reporting on our website as well as reporting to the feds, we would be looking at November 1st for those being released no later than November 1st. It could be sometime early October. I just don't know. It depends on the year. But we would be looking at those all packaged together.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Senator Abler.
I'm a practical legislator here. And so, you know, we could move forward with this. But I hope that as they continue to work internally, that the tests that are available could be released, particularly when people are deciding what school they want to go to or what district they want to stick with. So to the extent possible, it would be nice. So I don't have an amendment to the amendment, but I'm just suggesting that would be useful mm-hmm. to the users out in the hinterland.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senator Abel, I think that's a really good point and one that we would welcome. We would welcome further discussion about what is the best model going forward. In fact, one thing I found is that we've also released a survey to the public around, like, what does the new reporting model look like for going into the future, since we have this new review and revision cycle, and every 10 years, as well as the WIDA test coming in, as well as responding to the federally reauthorized ESEA. And so I think this is a conversation that we welcome going into future years.
And Madam Chair.
Senator.
We need stuff to do next year anyway, so this is a good start, and I thank them for their work on it. So.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I appreciate that MDE has taken a longer look at this and made some changes. Appreciate that work greatly, and also the committee for kind of having a little pause here to make sure we get this right. Mm-hmm. I was really excited, actually, with how much I heard about this after it came through committee, because it tells me that parents and other groups are really watching these assessment results, and they're valuable, and to have them out as early as possible is really important for our schools who want to watch that and make changes, for parents, like you were saying, Senator Abler, who are deciding what school do I want my child to attend, to community groups who watch the academics and different things. So appreciate this flexibility and these changes, and let's make sure we get this right, because it is important to many different people, and mostly to our parents. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. I think at this point, discussions on any of the other provisions which are the same and adjusting for dates. Okay. So we're going to still hold out that article, and that again is Senate Section 18, House Section 14, and then we have, they were the same, or we reconciled the different dates in Article 2. Senator DeMakeway.
Madam Chair, do we have to adopt the amendment?
You're right. Thank you. Some people. Thank you. All right, so actually, let's just hold the amendment. We'll hold out that article, and we'll hold the amendment and come back. And if we're ready, when we're ready, after enough time to process it and take another look at it, then we'll bring the amendment back, and we'll adopt that provision. Or yes. So we're just looking at the other provisions outside of those, and in Article 2 to adopt. So, all right. With no further discussion, I'll move Article 2 provisions as noted by staff, with the exception also noted, for adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The proposed House and Senate provisions of Article 2 are adopted. Thank you. All right. Well, we hit the 9:30 mark. I think the next work that we can do is just to go through the articles and adopt the same for the House and the Senate. And at this point, I think our process will be to go through our article at a time, one at a time, noting the provisions that are the same. We'll vote on them and adopt them. All right. And so on to Article 3, Ms. Parra. Is that right? Or it doesn't matter. Okay. Article 3.
All right, Madam Chair, members, Article 3 is the article on teachers, and according to the proposal in front of you, the first section would be Senate Section 7 and House Section 5. which are the same. The proposal is to adopt Senate Section 7 on coursework. The next section is Senate Section 8 and House Section 6 on requirements for licensure. Then next section is Section 9 of the Senate file and Section 7 of the House file, which is the teacher licensure assessment language, and it's the proposal is to adopt Senate Section 9. Then Senate Section 10 is matched up with House Section 8 on testing accommodations, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate Section 10. Next is Senate Section 11 and House Section 9, which is the teacher assignment with the suspension or revocation of license, and the proposal is to adopt Senate Section 11. Then it's Sections 12 and House Section 11, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate section, and then Senate Section 13, paired up with House Section 12 on the teacher evaluations, and that is proposal to adopt Senate Section 13. Then the final section is the repealer, which is the Senate Section 17 and the House Section 17, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate repealer.
All right. So I will move Article 3 provisions as noted by staff. Thank you. For adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. The proposed House and Senate provisions in Article 3 are adopted. All right. We will move on to Article 4. And again, yep, Ms. Lewis.
Madam Chair and members, on Article 4, Senate Article 5.
Oops, I'm sorry, Article 5. Yeah. Thank you.
But it is the House Article 4. The proposal is to adopt Senate Section 2, which is the same as House Section 1 on the individualized education programs.
All right. I will move Article 5 provisions as noted by staff for adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. The proposed House and Senate provisions are adopted. Now we go to Article 6.
Madam Chair and members, Article 6 in the Senate is paired with Article 5 of the House, and it's related to charter schools. The first section that is the same is Senate Section 3, House Section 3, and the proposal is to adopt Senate Section 3 related to the applicable law for charter schools. Next is Section 5 of the Senate file and Section 5 of the House file, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate Section 5 related to the application process for authorizers. Next, Section 7, paired up with House Section 7, adopting the Senate section to individuals eligible to organize a charter school. Section 8 of the Senate file is the same as Section 8 of the House file regarding the affidavit process and approval process for authorizers, and that is proposal is to adopt the Senate section. Next of same sections is Senate Section 13 paired up with House Section 13 regarding the mutual non-renewal of the charter contract, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate section. Article 6, Section 15 of the Senate file, and Article 5, Section 15 of the House file regarding teachers and the those allowed to be employed by the charter school. The proposal is to adopt the Senate Section 15. Section 17 is paired with Section 17 of the House file for conflicts of interest and the proposals to adopt the Senate section. Then the final section in this article is Section 18 of both the House and Senate file, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate Section 18 on the audit report.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lewis. All right, I'll move the approval of Senate Article 6 provisions as noted by staff for adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The proposed Senate policy provisions are adopted. All right. And that takes us to seven. All right. Article 7, Ms. Pear.
Madam Chair and members, the nutrition and libraries article, it's Senate Article 7 and House Article 6. There's the first provision in each of those is the federal child adult care food program provision. The language is the same in both bodies, but with a different effective date, and the House's proposal is to adopt the House language.
Thank you, Ms. Pear. All right. I'll move to approve the House provisions as noted by staff for adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The proposed House policy provisions are adopted. Is adopted. Thank you. All right. And then we move to Article 8. Ms. Lewis.
Madam Chair and members, Article 8 is the health and safety article. The first same provision or similar provision is Senate Section 4, House Article 8, Section 3, and it's definitions for a health service specialist, and the proposal is to adopt the House section that has a different effective date. Then next is Section 6 of the Senate file and Section 4 of the House file regarding to administration of drugs and medicine. The proposal is to adopt the House file. The difference is the effective date between the two. Section 8 of the Senate file is the same as Section 6 of the House file. And regarding epinephrine auto-injectors and injectors, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate section.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. All right, I'll move the House provisions as noted by staff for adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The proposed House and policy provisions are adopted. And now we have Article 8. Open. Is that right? Article 10. Okay. We are Article 10. Thank you. All right. And that looks like it'll be Ms. Lewis again. Yeah.
Madam Chair and members, there's one section in this article, and it's Senate section that proposed for adoption. Senate Section 1 is the same as House Article 8, Section 6, regarding the P20 partnership, and the proposal is to adopt the Senate section.
Okay. Thank you. I'll move to approve the Senate provision as noted by staff for adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The proposed Senate policy provision is adopted. All right. So we covered a lot of ground. So I appreciate the good discussion this morning and that we've moved forward through most of the bill. There is now similar language and some other no provisions, big differences that we'll move forward with and take some time to process. So we might still come back today. So we're not going to adjourn, but we'll go into recess. We would like to finish off that Article 1 with the amendment that we're considering for the change in reporting dates when we come back, and we'll see if we can adopt some more, work out some of our differences, and continue to adopt. So what I would like to do then is recess and questions. Senator Edler.
Madam Chair, I always enjoyed recess.
So. I do too.
Might have been my favorite class. But so I appreciate and I understand the uncertainty about times, and I'm glad mm-hmm. that there's a chance we'll come back today. Can Senator Swedzinski comment about what tomorrow might look like? Are you planning to come back tomorrow or wait to Monday? Some of us have private sector jobs. We need to coordinate around mm-hmm. that if there's a way to know what Senator. You're thinking.
To be determined. But we are probably going to meet.
Yeah. But do you have a ballpark idea of what time you might decide to do that? Because, like, I just have to move a bunch of patients around. So it would be helpful if you could.
Early morning right. would be my preference. But we haven't talked about it yet. Yeah. 6 a.m.
That would be perfect. There's not much traffic. So. Well, I appreciate just what notice you can at least give us an idea about. Not me, not
I would prefer morning. Mm-hmm. So that would free up your afternoon for
maybe 8:30 again or something. Is that
to accommodate all of your guests, including us at your business.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
So we're 2BD. We'll give out notice when we say when we'll recess as soon as where we seem when we're ready to go. And come back today and try to finish more work. And as Senator Swedzinski said, morning. We'll be back tomorrow morning. But we'll get the official word out before that time. And otherwise, we'll be flexible and get through this. All right. So thank you, committee members. We are in recess.